Fraud is not only proliferating, but scammers and their schemes are becoming more sophisticated and successful as the perpetrators get better and better at exploiting your trust. Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud is 99.3 County FM's effort to educate listeners on what to watch for, steps to take to avoid being scammed, and what to do if you're a victim of fraud. We partnered with the Prince Edward County Detachment of the OPP, the Prince Edward County Community Care for Seniors Association, and the Municipality of the County of Prince Edward to create this six-part documentary series. Each week, we'll explore a common type of scam, hear from victims and their families, and learn some tips on how we can protect ourselves. 99.3 County FM's radio series, Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud, is funded by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.
The last few weeks, we've talked about online fraud, email fraud, and emergency scams targeting seniors. All of these are concerning as they are becoming more sophisticated and harder to spot, even for the savviest among us. The type of fraud we're going to talk about today is different because it comes from people we think we know and trust. These types of scams have multiple layers of intricacy and often play out over years, resulting in losses sometimes in the hundreds of thousands. Romance scams are among the most common type of fraud against seniors in Canada, and the most lucrative for the fraudsters who use social media, dating apps, and readily available online information to target unsuspecting people who may or may not be looking for companionship. If you're on Facebook, for example, it's fairly commonplace for people you don't actually know to try to connect to you. If your profile is public, they may be able to get your email or phone number and contact you directly, dropping tidbits they've learned about your life online to make you think you've met before. Dating apps are also fertile hunting ground for scammers. Of course, not all people online are criminals, but the kind you meet on these platforms know what you're there for, and that's at least enough to start a conversation. You'd think that on a legit dating site, you'd be safe from predators. The better ones charge a subscription fee and have all kinds of rules about keeping communication safe and respectful. Some don't even allow you to communicate directly at first, which provides an extra layer of distance while you're getting to know each other. But these are real con artists. They're playing the long game. They know what to say to draw you in and often won't start to run their con for months or as long as it takes to convince you that your connection is real. Deb was one such victim. After posting her profile on a dating site, she was immediately contacted by a man who wanted to introduce her to someone in her area.
I have been using an internet dating site for over 2 years. I got really ticked off because it's expensive. And so in a fit of pique, I signed on to eHarmony, which is much cheaper. Within a day, I had somebody say, "Oh, well, I found my partner here, but I showed your profile to somebody up in Ontario, and he really thinks he'd like to meet you. And was I interested?" Sure.
Seems kind of odd. Why would a man still be on a dating site if he was already coupled up? This was the beginning of an epic scam. His suggestion to connect with this friend was really just a sly way to get her to communicate off the platform and away from moderators who might have caught on to the game. Ultimately, it was probably the same person running a multi-layered scam, using as many tools as he could to land a mark. Deb was curious. She played along.
You know, I'm there to try and find somebody.
Yes,
well,
clearly.
You don't find somebody if you don't try. I emailed him. He came back with several pictures. He's a nice-looking man, apparently. He told me a bit about himself. Widowed 9 years ago. Daughter in Australia. Kept belaboring the, "I want honesty and complete openness," and blah, blah, blah. Okay, sure, you can say everything you want. Having done this for 2 years on internet dating, you get a lot of, "I'm wonderful, I'm great." I took it in my stride. I thought, okay, let's not go overboard, boy. I'm not somebody who likes to brag. And this guy made sure that I knew he was financially stable, honest, and was a one-woman man, faithful and God-fearing, and as I gag. I did not think he was a con man at that point, but I'm gullible and naive. I'm not stupid. Anyway, we exchanged lots of emails. The way it seems to go on dating sites, the men get attached quickly. It's like, "Oh, give me a break. I'm not that special." But they all seem to. They're desperate.
So this, the common thread here which didn't surprise you,
yeah,
is that he got attached to you very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And how does one handle that?
I said, would you stop with the bullshit?
And all this is text.
Yes. At one point, he did phone me. I had a hard time understanding him. Now, he is supposedly Finnish. I don't know what a Finnish accent sounds like. So, and I also have a hard time hearing on the phone. I don't have hearing aid. So we decided it was much better to text or email.
While the accent wasn't necessarily a red flag, Deb was a bit perplexed that somebody who was apparently so ardently interested in her could not manage to meet up in person, even though he was supposed to be living not too far away.
He tried to tell me he was a luxury real estate investor and took business contracts. Well, I didn't know what that meant, but turns out he takes contracts to do certain jobs. He was working very hard, so had no time to come and visit, even though he was only an hour away. Okay, that's a red flag. He went down to New York. He was offered these contracts. He went rushing off to South Africa to take one. Okay, fine. We'll see you when you come back.
The scene was set. He's a jet-setting real estate investor with global interests. Fair enough, a good catch. But as soon as he left for South Africa, that's when things took a turn for the dramatic. His story started to sound like a Hollywood blockbuster.
He explains that he can't access his online banking from Cape Town, South Africa. Now that did not surprise me because his bank is in the U.S. The U.S. and South Africa have problems with South Africa being known as a terrorist funding site. I assume and I hope that everybody else is as honest as I am. They aren't, but that's why you don't give money or access to your private affairs. But yeah, you can't live your life totally afraid that everyone's out to screw you.
Now, Deb is a little different than your average senior. Before she retired, she was a systems analyst, someone who dealt with computers, software, and code at a very high level. Even so, she was almost fooled by this scammer. That's how good his game was. Whenever she questioned him, he had an answer ready. The stakes were getting higher with every interaction.
He has me sign on to his bank account with his password. And I said, I really don't like this. But I did a wire transfer for him.
So why?
My reaction is to be of help when I can. And if I felt that there was no comeback on me, I took pictures of all the screens, all the texts, so that if anything happened, I could say, look, he asked me to do this.
So you didn't feel it was going to hurt you in any way to do it?
No. The first one took a few days to go through, but it went through. So I was asked to do another one. Well, it didn't go through because the bank had frozen his accounts. They thought he was kidnapped and acting under duress. The fact that somebody else had signed on to his account using multiple platforms. So he didn't ask right away. He said, I'll have to get my friend to give me the money that I can pay this. You can get anybody to pretend they are so-and-so and email you. So that's no guarantee at all. Seeing somebody's passport in hard copy, there you know. He took several days to ask his friend, and I'm assuming he meant a Gene in Michigan. Well, he could only come up with $70,000. This is U.S. So I'm saying, why don't you go to the police station and have them notarize a statement saying that you're not acting under duress and the bank has to let it go. Oh, no, they won't do that. And he had to go back there in person to show them he wasn't acting under duress. Okay, I looked at the website. It's an online banking micro facility. There is no physical location.
Just an aside here, the Canadian Deposit Insurance Corporation, aka the CDIC, insures bank deposits in Canada. In the US, it's called the FDIC, or Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Either agency maintains a database of member institutions that anyone can access. Go to cdic.ca or fdic.org and search for the bank's details. If they are legitimate, they will be on that list. If not, it's clearly a scam. Logos on websites can be faked, but CDIC membership cannot. Okay, back to Deb's story.
So I actually did a tiny bit of research on legal credit unions in the U.S., but there's one very like it, but it is not the one that his account comes from. And then you start looking back and thinking, oh, well, you know, it was pretty weird that on his profile they had a picture of him and his name, but no other details. Why would you have that on your profile on your bank account? Then he finally asked me if I could help anyway, and I said, no, I can't. Now, had he not asked for money, I might have met him when he comes back from South Africa. But you don't ask somebody you've just barely met, never actually physically met.
At this point, Deb, do you feel it was fraud?
Oh, yeah. As I said, I'm gullible and naive, but not stupid. I'm not going to give money over 70,000 US to somebody on his email or text promise that he would pay me back with interest if that's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. So if he had not asked you for money, but had continued the interaction,
yeah,
this would still be going on.
Quite possibly.
Whoa, crisis averted. But had Deb not been skeptical of the man's story, it might have turned out quite differently. Our second story today is about a county resident who was targeted by someone they met through their church.
I believe it began around 2006, went for an intense period for about 5 or 6 years. The bulk of it was not discovered until approximately 2016, at which time a lot of work had to be done, at which point I guess the scam had metastasized into serious six-figure tax problems with the CRA. So not just disappearance of about one-third of a family's net worth, one-third to one-half, but also serious six-figure tax liabilities.
We should mention that our county resident is relaying the story, so it happened to someone they know quite well. The story you're about to hear has many psychological elements, indicating that the fraudster was well aware of the type of target they were after.
It would be a non-denominational church. The people in question who were defrauded, they had for many years gone to a Pentecostal church, but I think they moved on to another church.
Closer to their home or?
Closer to doom and gloom, end of the world. They'd been going there probably 5 years or more.
And then they met this person?
I don't know at what point they met the person.
Okay.
But somewhere around 2006, they were approached by this person they'd met through church to get involved in what's called a guaranteed return investment certificate investment, which was guaranteeing them 18% return backed by the CDIC, Canadian Deposit Investment Corporation, and Credit Suisse.
Did they ask for any background checks?
Nothing.
Is it because they met this person at church?
They were approached by someone they trusted from a place they trusted. And let's face it, you need a background check to coach Little League. You don't need a background check to go to church and do business there. So it's a prime place for predatory behavior, let's face it. These folks had been in this for about a year. And around that time, these are people who are close to me. I'd sold a house, and so I was, you know, happily sitting on a little bit of cash in between that and buying a new house, and they came to me with this investment I had to get in on. And I was like, well, tell me. And they described it to me, and I said within about 30 seconds, that's a scam. Get out of it now.
How long had they been in it at that point?
About a year.
Were they cognizant? Did they think it was doing well?
Well, yes, because they were getting their interest payments. So, you know, the classic thing when any kind of scam that is built on taking in money to pay off the previous investors, it was still in that early phase, so they're getting their interest payments. One of the various securities commissions had started moving in on the group at that point. I should add that one of the sales pitches that was given along with the guaranteed security of this 18% return was told, this is something the government will shut down. You have to get in on it now. That's the hard sell. And remember, this is happening in an environment where you might find more often than not people who distrust authorities.
Will be receptive to that kind of talking.
Yes.
That the government's the enemy. We're going to get them by doing this.
Yes. There was a large amount of money tied up. Now, luckily, because a securities commission had moved in there, and with some force and effort, that episode, they came out scot-free, were able to get their money back.
When you say force and effort, what do you mean?
Sitting down with these people who don't want to hear that they've been defrauded and explaining to them the risk they were at. Having put $250,000 into this that was all of the cash they had and having sold investments to do that and having taken out a line of credit on their home for another $250,000 to be into it for $500,000, that this thing was going to disappear, that the investigations into it were legit, that it was quite possibly a criminal activity, and that if they did not act very quickly and get out, they would probably lose all of that.
What were the red flags for you?
The entire pitch was a red flag. 18% guaranteed return doesn't exist. That existed for a brief window in the early 1980s. It does not exist right now. Maybe it'll exist again, and I can't imagine what kind of world we'll be living in, given our current conditions, if we have a guaranteed 18% return anywhere. The CDIC, Canadian Deposit Insurance Commission, only insures deposits with Canadian financial institutions for up to $100,000 per depositor. I know that. It's public information. It's in person's interest to know what the protections are on their investments. That's kind of how I approach these things. So that was one thing. And then this vague notion that somehow a Swiss bank was backing it up, but no one could really say who or what. So all the flags were there. I knew on the first pitch.
But even though our county resident managed to help his loved ones and their friends out of a terrible situation, the same person continued to prey on them.
Nonetheless, Joe, undaunted, continued on and got them into several other things, all of which were total losses. One was a loan that was presented as a mortgage, a $60,000 loan that was presented to a company that just needed to make ends meet. The documentation was a little handwritten note, not a single payment ever made on that.
When was this discovered?
It's hard to pin it down. It was first mentioned in passing around 2009 or so. I never actually saw the document until 2011. So that was just $60,000 right away. Someone needed help, and there's no actual mortgage. There's no registration. There's no security. There's nothing. Gone. There was another investment scam, which these same people got into well into the six figures, that was positioning itself as, and it pains me to say this, but it was that this company invests in startup businesses. And the reason why I invest in startup businesses is because most startup businesses fail. And as an investor in these, you can then share in the tax losses and apply them against your own taxation, which runs counter to every actual principle and applied rule of the Canadian tax code.
Perhaps the worst part of the story is that the same person who perpetrated these frauds continued to prey on people in the church, and yet none of his victims were willing to report him to the police.
Typically, they get angry when spoken to about it. They always have someone to blame. Typically, it's interfering government, not minding their own business.
Really?
Yes. There are other cases, too. Joe also came to them with someone who had a very sick grandma. Again, this is someone who they met at church. This is my friend, and she has a very sick grandma at home, and she's got a bunch of money coming to her, but she just needs, you know, $60,000 to tide her over. She'll pay you back at 18%. She'll give you post-dated checks. They came back twice. Two different loans. Not a single payment ever made. And at the time the second loan was asked for, the checks had been bouncing on the first one. And the explanation was, well, yes, it's taking a little bit longer than we thought. So can you give us more? And they did it. The same person. They met at church.
Has Joe been charged?
To my knowledge, no. In order for that to happen, the defrauded people would have to initiate an investigation with the police. I've encouraged them to do that, but they have not, perhaps out of embarrassment, perhaps out of fear, perhaps out of an unwillingness to face what's happened to them. They have refused to do that.
Have you had any sense from them that they are embarrassed about what they've been through?
Yes.
Have you picked up on that?
For sure, yes. And defensive.
Defensive.
Yeah.
Have they in any way been enticed again?
It's hard to know. I know that some controls have been put in place over their finances.
How are they being protected now?
They're protected in that what remains of their assets are now with a certified financial person, and that the account is shared with another family member who is responsible, who can oversee and know what's going on.
So they can't make these decisions now on their own?
They have final authority in their decisions. They don't have authority taken away from them, but nothing can be done unknown. Nothing can be done secretly or quietly.
And you haven't had to deal with, or as far as you know, nobody's had to deal with anything recently.
No, I mean, like I said, the tax implications of the one scam that started around 2008, that was only dealt with earlier this year. So that was a 15-year legacy that cast over these people. And I guess my thing in wanting to talk about this, look, there's a lot of very serious frauds going on the phone and online. But the other day I saw a note saying, you know, county police suspect that seniors in Prince Edward County built up 600,000 last year. Does that number sound accurate or something? And I'm thinking like, okay, I know a single couple who were bilked for that amount. So let's talk about this. And this is the good old-fashioned kind of scam, the con. Show up in a place where it would be unthinkable for someone to lie, or unthinkable for someone to be greedy, unthinkable for someone to be doing anything except that which is holy, and go to town.
Who can you trust? It's like Deb says, you can't just be suspicious of everybody, but you can and should speak to a trusted source for advice or get a second opinion if you're not sure. Trust your instincts. If something doesn't feel quite right, there's no harm in taking a step back. Pump the brakes, ask questions, get a second opinion, and don't be ashamed to speak to the authorities because they genuinely want to help. Almost half of all Canadians have been targeted by fraud. Older adults can protect themselves by learning to recognize common scams. Never share personal or financial information with someone over the phone or online. And sign up for fraud alerts from your bank so you'll know if your account is being accessed without your consent. As for romance, we all know people who have met their partners online. It can happen. But when the person you're chatting with weaves a fantastic story and starts asking for money before you've even met them face to face, be suspicious. Here are a few tips on what to do. Stop communicating with them immediately. Do a reverse search of their photos online to see what comes up. You can also type their job or the things they are saying in a search engine, adding the word scammer. If other people have posted similar stories, your new love might be nothing but a pipe dream. If you are a Prince Edward County resident and have been a victim of fraud, call our local OPP detachment at 613-476-2151. 613-476-2151. If you have been targeted by fraud, report it to the Anti-Fraud Centre immediately by visiting www.antifraudcentre.ca, www.antifraudcentre.ca, or by calling 1-888-495-8501, 1-888-495-8501. Your bank, the OPP, and local business owners want to keep you safe from fraud, so don't hesitate to ask for help. Join us next time when we'll learn about identity theft and how a county resident almost lost their Florida property to title fraud.
99.3 County FM, your nonprofit community volunteer-driven radio station, is proud to provide a platform for the voices of our community. The six-part series, Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud, will be available to stream in its entirety on our website at 993countyfm.ca after each episode airs. Some names of those interviewed have been changed at their request. Thank you to our 99.3 County FM production team. Scripts by Astrid Young. Interviews by Renee Wiseman-Stanners, Lynn Pickering, Brenda Little, Ken Palmer, and Krista Hepburn. Narration by Wendy Mesley. Host Jim J.J. Johnson. Music by Dustin Crenna. Production by Dave Wheatley. Other production and research, Jillian Carson, Helen Morris, Gage Broderick, Craig Mills, Lorraine Wilson, and Sherry Gervin. Thank you to all the members of our community and service organizations for sharing their stories.